Once the greatest mining country on earth, South Africa's annual mining production last year shrank 10.7% to its biggest annual decline since 1990. That's 31 years ago. South Africa now attracts less than 1% of annual global mineral exploration spend, and ongoing mineral exploration is really the only way to ultimately sustain mining's 7% contribution to GDP. In fact, grow it. South Africa's mineral potential, assuming best practice, is ranked by the Fraser Institute as 30 out of 83 mining jurisdictions, and South African mining investment could almost double in the next 4 years if the country was to return to the top quartile of the most attractive mining investment destinations. Now, imagine taking a 5 billion rand gold expansion project to the investment committee of the board. Mr. Baxter, what is your view of the electricity price and supply given by 2029, and given that electricity costs are now at 25% of cash costs versus 11% in 2009, and given the 523% increase in the past decade? And Mr. Baxter, is the project guaranteed continuing consequences of previous BEE deals when the company must renew the mining right in 2025, or will the company have to top up? And also, Mr. Baxter, what will the carbon tax liability of the project be in 2029, given the total lack of any visibility on any regulations or tax-free portions for the 170 rand a ton of CO2 tax that will apply in 2023? Now, what would your answers be, considering that the South African mining industry has about 15 to 20 years of significant large-scale mining left, and that the global standard is that it takes in the region of 10 to 20 years to discover, develop and bring into production new large-scale mines? It is clear that the country must urgently begin to build a new mine investment pipeline. But given the uncertainty around these questions, it's no surprise that investment is thin on the ground. But the question is how to make the country an attractive investment destination again. For without that, the mineral treasure trove that we have in our soil beneath our feet will remain locked there again as another commodity supercycle passes us by. Well, let's welcome our guests. Firstly, we've got Andries van Heerden, the CEO of Afrimat. He's one of the few deal makers in the country. Peter Leon, a respected mining law expert and partner at law firm Herbert Smith Freehills, and the global co-chair of its Africa group. And we've also got a very well-respected mining analyst, Peter Major, joining us on the panel, as sadly the DG in the DMRE had to cancel at the 11th hour. So, Peter, I'm going to ask you to kick us off here. As someone who's understood and studied our mining cadastre system for the better part of two decades now, what are some of the key issues? Because it was quite interesting speaking at the Minerals Council AGM last week to hear the minister lambaste our shambolic mining license regime. What are some of the key problems?
Well, I mean, the key issue, Michael, is that it's dysfunctional. And I was actually looking at the history of this issue, SAMRAD, the South African Mineral Rights Administration System. It was actually launched with a lot of fanfare by previous Minister Susan Shabangu in April 2011. And the issues with SAMRAD not working optimally, not being a proper online system, allowing, which I think is extremely worrying, manual applications still to be made, presumably because the online system doesn't work properly, not showing applicants who has what rights, and frequently just not operating properly. Those are the key issues. Now, you know, this is, you know, we're now out of the Zuma administration into the Ramaphosa administration, which has been in office formally since 2019, informally since 2018, when he took over from Zuma when he was removed from office by the ANC. So, I mean, you know, this administration's had 3 years to fix it. The Director General, who I'm sorry is not on the program, has been in office since 2017, appointed by former Minister Zwani, whom perhaps the less said the better. But, you know, this could be fixed. And I have actually spoken to a company in Cape Town called Spatial Cadastre, who do cadastral systems, mineral cadastral systems, around the continent. And because I've done a lot of work elsewhere in Africa, most of our neighbors who mine, like Namibia and Mozambique, the DRC, Ghana, Tanzania, have online cadastral systems which the World Bank have helped fund. And, you know, This company's offered its services to the DMRE, and they have not been accepted. The minister's now said, and I've got to give credit where it's due, that the current licensing system is, quote unquote, a nightmare. That is what he said at the Minerals Council AGM last week. And I think that's refreshingly honest, Michael. But if it is such a nightmare, and his Director General gave an undertaking to Parliament in March that the system would be completely fixed within 6 months, i.e. by the beginning of September, I would actually like to see that happen. But I don't understand when the DMRE and the DMR prior to that, before the departments were merged, have been aware of this problem literally since the system was launched 10 years ago. Why hasn't it been fixed? Now, you could take a cynical view and say, well, the reason it hasn't been fixed is that it actually enables corruption, enables the sort of issues that Andries will be well aware of with Aquila, with overlapping grants, duplication of rights, the Kumba ICT situation, which is a classic example of why you need an online cadastral system. But let's give this administration some room. But I mean, they've been in office for 3 years. I don't understand why the system hasn't been fixed. I'm glad the minister's now, seized with it and has given the department instruction. But I'd actually like to see whether, in fact, they try and do a sort of band-aid solution to what's not working, whether they actually don't get the right software to make the system work properly. That's going to be my question to the government.
And that is the big question. That was going to be my question to the Director General. What exactly is being done to fix this? Because from the outside, it doesn't look like an insurmountable problem to be able to digitize those rights and records and to have it available in a very open and transparent manner. And to your points, Peter, there are other countries not in developed markets. We're talking developing countries in Africa who have got far more advanced electronic cadastral systems. Andries, I want to come back to you as one of the foremost, more successful deal makers of the last decade and a bit. What has your experience been of trying to secure a mining right, trying to execute on a transaction, and the role that the DMRE and that existing regulatory regime plays in either enhancing or impeding the ability to execute on a transaction?
Michael, it is a process that you need to understand the inner workings, and you've got to live very close to the department, and in the end you do get the result. Funny enough, that is not our biggest challenge. The DMRE tends generally to be quite helpful nowadays, and they tend to get ways around their own inefficiencies and their lack of capacity. Our challenge is much more in other departments, such as the Department of Water Affairs and Sanitation. That is an absolute nightmare to try and get a water use license in any length of time. It's an absolute nightmare. On top of that, the South African police with their communities and all these mafia activities and things that we see, the South African police does not acts at all in a lot of the cases. And then thirdly, the municipalities, where we need to work very closely with local municipalities to get social and labor plans approved and get it incorporated in part of their plan. So those are the big challenges. So to be honest, the DMRE is actually a bit of a positive in that bigger landscape. And we've been successful with all our mining licenses. We're probably the biggest operator of mining licenses in South Africa. I think we've got 41 of them that are active at the moment, which probably gives us an advantage that we really know the officials. We know how to approach these things. We have direct access to Mr. Mokoena if we don't come right, and they do try to help. But I do agree the system is not. It's not easy. You've got to work hard to get your approvals.
And we'll come back to the role of the other departments in this, but just in terms of your experience and where you would like to see the system improve so that you don't have the department trying to work around its own inefficiencies, to your earlier point, what are some of the low-hanging fruit in order for us to radically overhaul and improve the system and make it just far more investor-friendly rather than a barrier to overcome?
I think Peter touched on a couple of points on in terms of the system. I think that that is definitely a point of that needs to be improved. I think we have big capacity constraints as well. For instance, the offices in Mpumalanga were closed for a while and caused a long backlog. And to work through that backlog, you know, the capacity is just not there. You know, it is a challenge. But give credit where it's due; they really do try to help. We recently bought the Nkumati mine out of business rescue. There were quite a number of jobs at risk there, and I must tell you, the department really bent over backwards to help us to get that Section 11 through, so that we could get the mine out of business rescue. So they are trying. They are trying hard.
Yeah, that's an important insight, because I think a lot of the popular narrative is still around a largely dysfunctional regime and department that is more of a hindrance than an enabler. But fascinating to hear that you're saying they are trying their hardest within the constraints, and to hear what the Minister said, Peter Major, last week at the Minerals Council, saying that the system is a nightmare. At least we have this acknowledgement of it. What would you like to see from an investor perspective to help improve the situation on the ground?
You mean me? Me, Peter Major?
Yes.
Look, I've been here long enough, many, many decades, that I think I've heard all sides, and I've pretty much experienced all sides. The bottom line is, and that's what you have to look at, if you want foreign investment, they come here for one reason, bottom line. And so they're going to care less about what's above the bottom line. The bottom line is, if something is dysfunctional, they're very put off. If something is corrupt, they are totally put off. And so it doesn't matter if 90% of DMR employees are working very hard and mean well. I'm saying as a funder, and this is local funders, but even more so overseas funders, they don't care how hard everybody is working in the DMR. They just want to know, is it fair? Is it efficient? Is there no corruption? They don't care if all the DMR are on holiday. If the system's working, they don't care. They just want their license. Or if they hire a consultant to put in their license, they want some kind of deadline, some kind of timeline. They want some kind of milestone. You know, is this a one-month process? Is it a six-month process? Whereas the DMR always says, you're going to get a response to your application in 2 weeks. Now, I know they're trying to do that, but they have to deliver on that all the time. It has to be repetitive, like machine, like mechanistic. Mm. And if your system, if you're under, your overall system is worse than dysfunctional, if it's corrupt, you know, if the concrete is so eroded that the foundation is just loose gravel, then it doesn't matter if 98% of the people are doing their best. If we can analogize this, it's like a bus driver. Mm. The whole bus could be full of people who mean well, have money in their pocket, have college degrees, and are ethical. But if your bus driver is incompetent or corrupt and he's driving the bus off, a lot of people are going to die, a lot of people are going to get hurt. And so, yes, the cadastre, it is one of the foundations of our DMR. And if it was done correctly at the start, it would have avoided corruption, it would have avoided incompetence, and it would have avoided a lot of lawsuits. Mm. So if they agree this pillar has to be addressed, then you throw everything at it. And you put on guidelines, guardrails, milestones, and you allocate, you budget the resources, and you start holding people accountable, because apologies mean nothing to investors. They would rather a guy really screw them over and doesn't apologize, but he says, but I'm going to do this to make it up.
And Peter, on that point, I want to come back to how much of that is current reality versus looking through an historical lens. And Imperial Crown Trading, we mentioned Kumba, we mentioned Aquila, and we haven't really had a repeat of those, you know, dual like license holders cropping up. And how much of this is just an incapacity problem?
No, we have. They are ongoing, and I can speak right now. We have had two of that happen in the last month. So it is ongoing. Yes, it's not the big ones, because they're a little bit afraid now because they could be prosecuted. But the little ones are continuing. And a lot of it's because of the system.
Well, they do say sunlight is the best disinfectant, and that's why we need to see a fully transparent and digitized mining cadastral system. Peter Leon.
Yeah, I was just going to make the point. I mean, I get what Peter said. I mean, I've actually had, I would say, the pleasure of working remotely in Saudi Arabia for the last 10, 12 months, advising the government on their new mining code with Saudi Arabia's transition from hydrocarbons. And it has been an absolute pleasure, I must tell you, dealing with the Ministry of Industry and Mineral Resources, A, because you're dealing with very competent officials, but B, because the minister said to me at the beginning of this exercise, working with the World Bank, we want a world-class system, follows international best practice. ICMM, the International Council of Mining and Metals, is our yardstick. We want to implement in Saudi Arabia what we have, what you have in Western Australia and Ontario, are two good examples, because they always score very highly on the Fraser Institute report. And that's what we set about doing. But one of the things the Saudis have done, in addition to having a proper online cadastral system, is, and I didn't even have to persuade the minister about this, is implement mandatory time limits for making decisions, so that if you have a compliant application, you'll get a mining right within 60 days. Now, I see Roger Baxter of the Minerals Council has told the AGM of the council that in South Africa it takes 245 days to secure a prospecting right and 355 days to get a mining right. If you go to Botswana, if your application is compliant, you'll get the right, the mining right, the mining license in 3 weeks. I mean, it's staggering. It just shows the level of, I don't know what it is, incompetence. But but there's a, you know, it's not just incompetence, Michael. The framework's wrong. I said to the government back in the day, nearly 20 years ago, when the MPRDA was going through Parliament, for heaven's sake, put time limits into the legislation, as you have with the Competition Act, because under the Competition Act, if the Competition Commission doesn't make a decision within 60 days, the decision's deemed to be granted. And I said you should have that sort of provision in the MPRDA. It was fiercely resisted by the department, because I think they knew very well they didn't have the capacity or the capability to do that. But I think if the government's serious about getting investment in the mining industry, they have to implement mandatory time limits. Maybe you make them, you know, more than 60 days, say 90 days for a mining right, or 60 days for prospecting. But I mean, but at least have some time limits in the legislation. If you don't have time limits, and you know, bureaucrats are not forced to process applications efficiently, this problem is just simply going to continue. And I mean, you know, the minister has said there are 5,365 outstanding applications, some of which go back 10 years. I mean,
it's, yeah, well, it'll take 10 years to clear that backlog if you do sort of one a week. It's ridiculous, Andries, listening to the constraints that are imposed on operating and acquiring mining licenses in the country. Would you go along with what Peter Leon is saying about imposing mandatory time limits, say a 90-day time limit, on making a decision?
Oh, yes, that would help a lot, especially if it can be done to all the departments. I think one of the interesting challenges, I suppose, is because the process is so complex, I really feel for a small operator that doesn't have the experience of exactly how the system works. I think it'll be a nightmare, but, you know, for somebody like ourselves, you know, we've bulked up on resources that actually, you know, make sure that everything is done right and then follows it up and follows it through the process. And I think that's unnecessary if the system works. We need to get the system to work by itself, because I can imagine a foreigner that doesn't know the process will have an absolute nightmare getting through there. But once you understand the process, you know how the process flows, you know how to follow it up, it is possible to get your licenses through in a good time. So it also comes back to a willingness by the department, and I think they do deserve credit that there's been a big improvement. Maybe not everywhere, I hear what Peter Major says, but our experience is, especially in the last 2 years, we've seen a significant improvement in their willingness to help, their ability, their assistance to get things done so that jobs can be created and jobs can be saved.
And in fact, that speaks to one of the government's primary mandates in mining and focus on transformation. If you're going to continue to have a system that favors larger incumbents and well-resourced firms, how are you going to grow the pie? How are you going to get new, primarily black entrants, smaller firms without those resources to come into the mining industry to develop those pipelines that we so sorely need in order to grow the industry? Peter Major?
Boy, you're touching all the right buttons here, Michael. You're right. You need new money. You need new investors. And without sounding like a scam artist, it's new investors that fund all new development in all industries. And why? Because they're the sacrificial lambs, unfortunately. Look at the IT industry. You know, 9 out of 10 go bust. But if you didn't have new investors, the established investors, they know too much. They don't want to shake up the market that they're now in control of. And they're also too afraid. They've lost money for decades pursuing new ideas. And it's the same in minerals. You know, the big established mining companies here, they know all the problems they're going to have starting up a mine. They're more interested in milking the mines they've got and getting diversification out of the country. Now, traditionally, new investors would fill that role. You know, there's young new investors. They think they've got an angle. They think they've got a better market for the commodity. They think they got some good contacts in this country that will help them mine at a lower cost. They think the big guys are dozy or too lazy or too arrogant. But we have shut off all that new investment, all these new startups. And they're not always new startups. They're often just new and different investors. You could have established mining companies worldwide that have never been here, and they might see a gap. But yeah, if the system doesn't accommodate that, if the system has too many parts that aren't working right, and if I can refer, the system today is still accepting applications over a mineral right that's already granted. And when you ask the DMR about it, they say, well, you guys can sort it out. You know, they don't want to make the decision. So they'll accept applications that go over existing mineral applications. They'll accept applications for different minerals. So you could theoretically get 3 applications over the same property because they've applied for different minerals. Mm. And I'm not saying it's all the individual DMR's fault, but it's the system that allows that. And as Gwede has pointed out, if no BE is required, then why are all the branches refusing to accept applications without a BE? And I'm not saying get rid of BE here or keep it or change the percentage, but see, there's inconsistency. From the minister on down, there's no flow through.
And I want to come through finally to what Andreas van Heerden raised, Peter Leon, about the blame perhaps residing outside of the DMRE to a large extent around water use licenses or NEMA. We know there are issues around financial provision regulations with NEMA. Where else does the regulatory bottleneck, where do these constraints reside in order for us to kind of have a holistic approach to improving the environment?
Yeah, I mean, Andreas has made a very, very good point, very important point. Look, the government, this is years ago, introduced the One Environmental System, which was supposed to bring the Department of Environmental Affairs, Fisheries and Forestry, as it now is, the Department of Water Affairs and the DMRE together when you had a license, so there'd be a joined up process. So, for example, you know, go back to Saudi Arabia, when an application for mining right is submitted to the ministry are obliged to send it to the environmental ministry, and they have a period of days, or I mean, they have actually have something like a month or so to process the application, send it back to the minerals ministry, but the process is properly joined up. So what we have here, though, is an idea of having a one environmental system that you would get all your rights simultaneously, the environmental approval, the water use license, and your mining right all together. But in practice, it hasn't happened because you've got 3 different departments working to different timelines. And I mean, if you think the situation in the, and I'm sure Andreas can speak to this, if you think the situation at DMRE is bad, try Water Affairs. So the minister is now trying to, I think, create some sort of water commission to process all these thousands of licenses that have never been dealt with. Situation, to quote Minister Montashi, really is, more, if you can imagine anything worse than nightmare, it's worse than that. So what the government actually created, I think it's about 4 years ago, with the One Environmental System, actually isn't working. And I I actually think now this requires the attention of the presidency. As you know, the Treasury and the presidency have now set up Operation Vulindlela to drive investment into the South African economy, and this is something that really needs to be on their agenda, because if you get a mining, you don't have a water use license, you don't have your environmental approval, well, what do you do? You can't mine.
And I think that's a great point to leave it off on, as sadly, Peter Leon, we have run out of time. But it is time for an holistic approach through Operation Vulindlela to cut through these various intersecting issues. And one can only imagine the nightmare that is the Department of Water Affairs at the moment. The macro environment is still very supportive for commodities. I mean, companies are producing returns greater than their cost of capital. We should be attracting investors in droves. But sadly, unless you really do understand the system, a la an African matter, one of the bigger players, then it really isn't conducive to developing that pipeline of new investors, to Peter Major's point. But that's where we're going to have to leave it off. Thank you very much. That was Peter Leon, mining law expert, partner at law firm Herbert Smith Freehills, and a global co-chair of its Africa group, Afrimat CEO Andries van Heerden, and mining analyst from Mergence Corporate Solutions, Peter Major.